Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, as we conclude another week of reporting and news analysis, international news has certainly dominated the media attention with Iran, North Korea, and Middle Eastern events really maintaining top billing. We do this program live, and as you are aware, there was another shooting there in Indiana. There at a middle school, two people involved, a teacher and a 13-year-old student. The officials are saying that they're going to come back at 2 o'clock, which will probably be 3 o'clock Eastern time today for some further updates. But these kinds of things, unfortunately, are not the kind of headlines that we like to report on. But I do want to acknowledge that at this point and say we do need to pray for those families involved there in that circumstance as well. But on this Friday program, we try to focus on the matter of economics and finances. So we're going to go there and try to tie in some of these things that have happened this week into it, because all of the events, the international events, the North Korea circumstance, Iran effort that is unfolding as we speak, their meeting, Iran meeting with the EU and Russia and China today, relative to them coming along and providing economic relief from U.S. economic sanctions. All of these things all play into the economic picture more broadly. And we touch on these things here in a specific way on our Money Mission Friday. And since economic activity, investments, retirement, frankly, just living and providing for all of our families, as you're listening to the program today, because it's so important to all of us, we're going to talk about some of these practical things. One of them is the real possibility of $80 a barrel gas. New York and one place up there is talking about and has their price of gasoline at $5 a gallon. We're going to touch on what that means. We're going to talk about mortgage rates, which the headline news right now is saying are at a pace of increasing that has not been seen in 50 years. The Federal Reserve is talking about raising interest rates in June. All of these things do tie together somewhat. We're going to talk about them today, and I'm going to title this program Money and Economics, and we're going to talk about investing and risk. We're going to bear down on the concept of risk, because that's involved in everything. As all of you are listening, if you have any investments, if you have any kind of planning, risk is a part of it. We're going to talk today about that, and we're going to tie it in with biblically responsible investing, which is something that we promote heavily as we go through the program. We'll talk more about that as well. So with that introduction, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohrer, and I'm going to be joined today, as I normally am on Fridays, by William Parker. He's the CEO of Grandview Asset Management, as we put together here this emphasis on Friday. So, William, let me welcome you to the program today, and I'm just going to start right out with you and give you just an opportunity to state what you view as you look back on this week. I've cited some international events. But from an economic perspective or whatever, what do you think from your perspective as you look at economics, investing, and how that goes, what event happened this week that you think potentially impacts investments in our economy perhaps more than anything else? I'm just curious.
I would say the president, in his announcement about delaying or canceling North Korea, the real news that day was the rolling back of Dodd-Frank and some of the rules and regulations that will really affect some regional and local banks. And in my opinion, they're over-regulated. And it's very hard. They spend millions or billions, depending on who the company is, in just redundant areas of compliance that they're already doing, and now the government with the Dodd-Frank rule had basically made it impossible for small businesses to get loans from small banks or regional banks because of some of the handcuffs that were put on them. So I think the unwinding of the Dodd-Frank rule was probably the biggest impact, although it may not be see the effect right now. But I think banks, as interest rates go up, their net interest margin goes up, and I think banks will benefit from the fact that the president, once again, making a promise and keeping it. And I can't say that I've ever seen this in a presidency. It seems like every week he's keeping a promise. And to me, it's so refreshing.
Yeah, I tell you, I mean, William, I agree with you, and we've talked about it on this program earlier in this week. These are not insignificant things. The Korea debate is not insignificant. The Iran encounter is not significant. The encounter with China, not insignificant in trying to get the balance of things squared away. What's happening with the FBI on all this investigation, that there seems to be a tide turning. These are not insignificant things. And you mentioned Dodd-Frank. A lot of the listeners listening right now may not know exactly what that is, but small business do, and people involved do. And William, I'll just say one thing. You mentioned that, and I wasn't even thinking of that, but I was talking with two individuals this week, small business people, who have been literally penalized, if not nearly put out of business, because of the implications of Dodd-Frank. So you are correct. I mean, if you want to starve people economically and keep business from growing, you shut off their credit. And effectively, that's what that was doing.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's, listen, geopolitical issues, on the other hand, the setback in North Korea, I think is really, Kim Jong-un has come out to say that he's still willing to keep the date, apparently, according to my last reports that I had read about the meeting. I think that they're starving to death in North Korea, and they do want to make a difference. I think that the president has put some hardline things on the table, through Mike Pompeo, and I think that China also, it's in their favor to get this done. So I think the president's going to get it done, and this is something that would be historically one of the probably the biggest things. Ending the Korean War would be a huge compliment for any president, be Republican or Democrat. No one's been able to do this, bring the two sides together again. So I think there's a lot of things in the air. We have the FBI investigation. We have the there's so many. Every time you turn on the news, there's different gate. You know, spy gate is what it's called now. But I think that 99% of the people that work at the FBI and the DOJ are good people, and I think they want also justice to be held up and for the truth to come out. So I know that in the end, God allows the truth to come out, and we'll see what happens. You sow what you reap, reap what you sow, and I think this is going to have a boomerang effect on some of the people that really went after the president.
I think so as well, William, and I do pray for that. And ladies and gentlemen, we're just about at the break. I started the program talking about high price of gas. We went to Dodd-Frank here and its implications. But all of these things we're talking about all do factor into the mood of the American people. It does factor into economic decisions of one type or another. It does factor into all of these things which affect you and I. And even though we may not have a direct impact on these things, we need to know about these matters of policy, these matters of decisions that are being made. When we come back, we're going to talk about the impact of the price of oil and the impact on gas and what people are already saying, that it's already going to curtail economic activity this summer. We'll find out about that. We'll talk about that and more when we come back after this break here in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. We'll be right back here on Standing the Gap Today. Sam Rohr and William Parker on Money Mission Friday. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr. At Stand in the Gap Radio, we love hearing from you, our listeners. Here's a comment from Ralph in Pennsylvania. I really appreciate Stand in the Gap every day. And here's Sandra in Troop, Texas. She says, I'm a Christian and member of the Church of Christ. Please respect our differences, but I do want you to know that your Stand in the Gap Today and Stand in the Gap weekend programs I enjoy so very much. I'm also thankful for the careful work and research your organization does. May God bless your works. And here's another one from Judy, a regular monthly partner in Pennsylvania, who just said, "Keep up the good work. I don't know how to thank you enough." Well, Judy, Sandra, and Ralph, you've blessed our hearts and tens of thousands more. Your prayers and regular monthly assistance is also a double thank you, for which we cannot thank you enough. Friends, if you identify with Ralph, Sandra, and Judy, but you haven't yet contacted us, would you consider standing in the gap with us financially in prayer? Just go to standinthegapradio.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
We all know that as goes the economy, so goes the attitude of a nation. In the end, as it said, people generally vote their pocketbook. So it's clear. Former President Clinton made famous this statement when he said, "It's the economy, stupid." Remember that? Well, God says throughout Scripture that a nation that obeys Him will be blessed of God. And in part, economic prosperity would be a result. So it's natural and appropriate that Christians and responsible citizens observe and evaluate economic factors and changes that occur, as they will impact our plans, our families, and ultimately our security. And while any of us have little direct impact on the decisions that are made by business or governmental leaders that impact our finances, we must remember that the principles of economics, the policies regarding debt and borrowing and spending all what we have, stems from some worldview, and that a biblical worldview is the only view that will produce and ensure God's blessing and national economic prosperity. And we're going to delve more into that theme there I'm talking about in a future program where we talk about economic principles and how they really connect biblically to what we actually see around us. But we're going to go into just a slightly different area here right now. We'll save some of that for a future program. But Bill, I want to go into a practical issue, the thing that's on the news today, and that is the price of oil. I mean, one of the things that really affects all of us is that, particularly down south, where the majority of people drive more and all of that, there's different parts of the country where people are more driving dependent. But price of oil right now is sitting at about $70. I think they just said it was down a little bit right now. Some are saying it's going to go up to $80. There's a place in New York City where they have gas priced at $5 a gallon. That's a big, big deal. Talk about it. In the past, you used a number of about $50 a gallon is a number that is good economically. Well, if you start approaching 70 or 80, that's not so good. So take and factor that in a little bit, how that would impact or may impact our economy here.
Well, I think it's being falsely elevated. There's more gas and oil in the world than there ever has been. And the relationship between, this goes back to an earlier conversation about the petrodollar and the petro-yuan, where, you know, going away from the petrodollar. But I think that in summertime, usually prices go up. But the price of oil, I think, is just like I think it was deflated when it went down to 28, you know, the high 20s. I think it was being oversold. And now I think it's being overbought from a perspective as, you know, the valuation of it. And it's going to affect, it slows the economy down. It also affects margins for, you know, tractor trailer companies or, you know, anybody that's using fuel to power something. It affects the average person, the daily person, where it used to cost $40 to fill up your SUV. Now it's $66. I mean, so there's a huge impact on discretionary spending when the price of oil goes up. Historically, I don't think it's staying at this level. I think historically it's probably going to go back to the mid-50s if I had to guess. But there's certainly cases where, you know, where countries control the amount of production and cut levels that actually are beneficial, and it's really benefiting Russia right now because their major export to the European Union is oil, and the price of oil right now is helping out Russia tremendously. So we have to really truly wonder, has this been put together by some parties in the Middle East and Russia in order to create such a high price for oil? I don't know. But it seems to me to be a little bit higher than it should be.
Well, I wonder, William, on that, as we talk on that just a bit more before I go to high mortgage rates that seem to be increasing. Saudi Arabia purposely have increased their price. They're charging more. They suffered when the prices went down. They tried to lower the price, as you said earlier, drive the price down, flood the market with the intent of trying to hurt people like Iran and so forth. But in the meantime, Saudi Arabia, major player, they got hurt substantially because they lost a lot of revenue. Now they're trying to make it back up. But there's a connection here, and I haven't heard very much talk about it, but there's some playing around with the price of oil. But your point being, the United States is now really a net exporter of oil. At some point, the benefit of having U.S.-based oil coming out of the ground here should factor into our prices, should it not?
Well, it should. But you remember, the price is really set by nations that are exporting it. You know, if we were to come out and all of a sudden start exporting oil at $50 a barrel, believe me, the Saudis and everybody else would be screaming about it. So it's kind of one of the things you got to play ball with everybody when it comes to the price of oil in other countries that are affected by it, whether it's their main export or import. I really do think that there's this tension in the Middle East that has been tied now to oil. And it seems like whenever historically we have tensions in the Middle East, there, you know, with Jerusalem now being the new capital of Israel and some other things, that we always see this spike in the price of oil. So, it's not that there's a lack of oil, Sam. It comes down to, you know, do you have enough capacity to refine the oil into a product that you can use? And the other part of it is that, you know, OPEC really does control the world when it comes to the price of oil. So I think there's probably conversations happening between the United States and OPEC right now about what's going on with the price of oil and why it is so high. It can't be sustained at this level. So in my opinion, it hurts businesses.
It does. And I will mention one other thing here just as a point of interest. I thought that, you know, today I mentioned that Iran was going to be meeting with the leaders from the European Union and Russia and China. Those three entities we talked about yesterday in the program being empire-building entities. Iran wants to dominate the world. China wants to clearly dominate the world, and they have a president who's emperor for life now. Putin and Russia wants to do that, and certainly the EU do. Well, the EU and Russia and China stepped in right after Mike Pompeo said that the U.S. was going to impose serious sanctions on Iran, stepped up and said to Iran, we will come to your aid and we will provide financing for you if the sanctions for the United States make you to suffer. Yesterday, Iran went back to them and put out five requirements, and one of them was that the EU, Russia, and China agree to buy Iranian oil from them at whatever rate if the U.S. was successful in somehow preventing the sale of Iranian oil. So when you talk about certain things happening in the Middle East, I just put that on the table as well to say there's a lot happening that we may see some impacts of that if we go into the next week or so.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things or several things that we look at when we talk about the economy, Sam, is we look at how much cardboard is being produced in any given month, because everything comes in cardboard, whether it goes to the grocery store, it goes to Home Depot, Lowe's, or wherever it ends up, or a shipment to your house. Everything, including a pizza, comes in a cardboard box. So cardboard is a really good weather vane indicator of how well the economy is doing. And when you tie into that the amount of cars that are carrying stuff on the railroads, you know, how's transportation doing, and how are tractor trailers moving things across the United States. Those three things are really kind of a weather vane of how the economy is doing overall, and it usually, when those things slow down, the economy slows down. So I'm not telling people to get out of the market by any means of imagination, but I'm just saying they're good things to keep track of.
Okay, let's shift gears here in the last couple of minutes. Mortgage rates, they're saying today, are up, and that's at a rate that exceeds what we've seen in the last 50 years. 4.66% is what I think one of the major rates are right now, is 4.1% last week. Last year was 3.9%. To me, that's still a fairly low rate. I know when I bought my home back in 1979, I paid 10%. It was out of sight. Obviously, we don't want to go back to that point, but what do you see happening with the mortgage rates? What is that indicating? And is that at all tied into the Federal Reserve giving some indication that they're going to increase their borrowing rates and all that sometime in June? Put those two together for you.
Well, I mean, interest rates raising have a really – there's a multi-effect to it. You have to understand that as we pay our debt back to the people that hold our, you know, our own debt, as interest rates go up, the United States has to pay more interest on the trillions of dollars that we've lent out. We borrowed money from other countries by them buying our bond. So, I mean, paying higher rates of interest in the future is definitely going to escalate the amount of money that we have to pay into the debt. As we right now, I think, what are we, $22, $23 trillion in debt? So interest rates have an effect on that. Interest rates also have an effect on the price of buying a building or buying maybe new equipment or whatever it may be. So I do see that the real estate that I own, or maybe that you own, will probably not increase that much in the next 10 years. And here's the reason why, Sam. Millennials, and I don't want to talk about it in general, but I think there's a lot of millennials that don't want to own a home. They just rather rent. And so that has an impact on the price of real estate. And some millennials do. They're extremely responsible. They want a home and a garage and a mowed lawn and all those kind of things, and the things that we all want. But a lot of them today don't. So real estate in the United States is going to be impacted by interest rates going up because people are going to pay more for borrowing money. But I think really it also has an impact on businesses too, and they're paying more now that they have maybe some access to smaller banks since they rolled back some of the Dodd-Frank stuff. I think that they still 4-5%, 6% interest rates is really that's really historically not that bad. I mean, we don't want to go back to the 80s where, you know, CDs were paying 16 and people were paying 12% of the mortgage. So there's definitely an impact on the economy.
Okay. But end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, at this point, yeah, there's some adjustment taking place economically. Oil is there. But as William's saying, don't necessarily have to think that that's just going to continue to go up. You're going to see some settling because of where the United States is now in producing oil. That should have long-term benefit. Mortgage rates up a little bit, certainly from what they were, but really not yet bad, but things need to keep in mind. But these are all matters of risk that factor into it, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about now risk and investing. Everybody has to have a level of risk. How do you define it? How do you apply it? We're going to do that when we come back.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The shot heard round the world was a line from the famous poem, The Concord Hymn, recounting the Revolutionary War battle between the Minutemen and the British troops by a bridge in Concord, Massachusetts. It was written by poet Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was born this day, May 25, 1803. Being friends with such notable writers as Nathaniel Hawthorne and Louisa May Alcott, Ralph Waldo Emerson composed some of the best poems in American literature. He stated, "America is another name for opportunity. Our whole history appears to be like a last effort of divine providence in behalf of the human race."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
As we return now to Stand in the Gap today, I just want to remind all of you as you are listening, again, if you haven't told a friend about this program, please do so. We try to evaluate where our listeners are listening and who's engaged in finding and appreciating what is on this program more. And so that's why when I ask for you to communicate to us by dropping a note, by going online to Stand in the Gap today and giving us just a short email that you are listening, what you like about the program, what you like about the guest. These are all things that are really very, very, very important. And I can't overemphasize it enough. And we need to know you're there. We are so much enjoying hearing from those who are communicating to us, but there are so many out there who you have not yet done so. It's really important, and we want to know that you're there and what you think. And then, again, as I mentioned, tell a friend about it. Truth does no good locked up in a closet. And if you're benefiting from this, as we know so many are, go ahead and share that. Go to our website, standinthegapradio.com, or on our free app where you can put in the phrase Stand in the Gap. You can find links to our guests. You can find links to previous shows and archives, speeches, video that I've done or others have done. Our new TV program, Stand in the Gap, the links can be found. The programs can be found on there as well. A whole host of things. Just take advantage of them, and I hope that you do. We're going to shift gears here right now as we are focusing here on, again, money and economics on Friday here on Money Mission Friday. When it comes to investing, I know one of the first questions that a person must consider is the reality of risk. In fact, if you've ever talked with a financial or wealth manager about your particular investments, or you've gone online to do research, which most do, and I encourage that to be done, one of the first questions, if you get anywhere at all in depth, you'll have to answer is this: what level of risk are you comfortable with? I can say personally, I found this somewhat difficult to answer because I'm not sure that I know exactly what it means when they say risk. What does that mean? How much? And so in this segment, I want to talk with my guest, William Parker, about that element of risk. I want to define it, I want to describe it, and then apply the principle as best we can. So William, when it comes to responsible investing and the question as to what level of risk a person is comfortable with, would you define to me or actually say why that is done? Is that being asked because it's a law that it's done? Is it being done because it just makes sense by a wealth manager to ask that? Or is it something else?
Well, I mean, it's Sam, it's a fiduciary responsibility for the advisor to try to collect that information. And it's usually if there's a couple, you each one want to do their own risk tolerance. I just had pleasure of two couples coming in early this week, on a very early in the morning meeting. And he was, I thought, you know, meeting them, I know who they are, they've been friends for a while. I thought he was a risk taker and I thought she was conservative. Well, guess what? When we did the Riskalyze questionnaire, who I thought was aggressive, he was conservative and she was aggressive. So you have to understand that even in a marriage, and it's good, they didn't realize that they really never talked about finances and the depth that we went into. But yeah, having it is part of the fiduciary standard of trying to understand somebody's risk tolerance and what they're in, and they should know what kind of risk they're taking. And everybody has a risk number. If you go to our website, BRIinvesting.com, and leave your name and your email address, we'll send you a link where you can actually take a risk tolerance questionnaire. It's confidential. And it'll give you a number, and it'll tell you what kind of risk taker you are. And it'll be the same thing for your spouse. They should do it as well. So okay. If you go to BRIinvesting.com, we can help you with that.
Okay. Well, that's good. So, again, we are emphasizing BRI Investing, BiblicallyResponsibleInvesting.com. They can do that. And we're going to talk more about the specifics of that in the next segment. But you're talking – you used the word risk tolerance. That's what level we're comfortable with. You mentioned that when a couple comes in, certainly you want to make sure that both are on the same page. I think that's a great idea. But define it a little bit. Risk tolerance. Risk of doing what? I mean, risk of how much we are afraid we may lose, how much we are willing. Define that if you could.
That's a great question, Sam. When you do a risk questionnaire with us, and we will tell you, for example, when we do a report, it'll say, here's what your portfolio would have done in 2000, 2001 during the crisis of the tech bubble. You would have lost 34%. And here's what would happen 2007, 2008. If you're invested the way you are now, you'd lose 40%. Or, you know, during good economic times in the past couple of years, your portfolio would have went up so much based on the positions in your portfolio. So what the risk questionnaire thing is, it basically tells you, hey, if we have another catastrophe and the market really sells off like it did before, there's a really good possibility that you may lose 34-40% of your portfolio if we go through another really bad spot like we did in 2001 and 2007. So it tells you in black and white, here's what the upside is and here what the downside is in the next 6 months. And I think people, when they see, they get sticker shock when they see, wow, I could lose that much money if the market went down. You mean my portfolio could drop by 30%, you know, and I would no longer have $500,000 in the account. I have a lot less, you know, I have $150,000 less than what I started with. So that's something that people need to know. Now,
All right, let me interject if I can here, right, when sure. This. You talked about risk. There's a downside and an upside. I want to go there because when a person, if they come in and they step in and they do that risk analysis on the site,
right,
and it comes back with a number, that risk part, it's tied to, as you're saying, on the downside. If there's an economic downturn and people have all who are listening right now, they've all been impacted. They really have. And some go back to 2008 and other years and they still may not have recovered. So if they look at risk there, we know the downside. But is the selection of a risk number, does that also translate to the potential gain
Absolutely.
That may be made based on how that's done? So link those. It's not just perhaps preventing the amount of blood loss at a downturn. There's also a factoring into how much gain could happen on a time when things go up. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, volatility has two sides of it. It has the downside and the upside. And, since 2009, the volatility, for the most part, if you take a look at the long picture, has been to the upside. You've made a lot of money if you've been invested in the marketplace, or you should have been. You should have made a lot of money if you invested in the right things, because the market's gone from, 6,000 to 24,000. So, the market itself has quadrupled in the past 10 years. So that's a risk portfolio that gives you the upside during the good years. Now, that being said, that does not... You said there are also, you have to understand, every bear market or bull market comes to an end. The bull market we're now in, I don't know when people are retiring right now, Sam, listening to this show, whether they're going to be retiring into a bear market for 6 years, or are they going to continue to retire into a bull market for the next 5 years or 1 year or 2 years. No one has that crystal ball. So you have to understand that, especially if people are retiring in their early 60s, they might have 30 years to live. So they may need risk in their portfolio in order to keep up with inflation, because what they're getting now from Social Security or their pension is going to have a lot less spending power 20 years from now. It's not going to be worth $5,000 a month. Your pension is only going to be worth $2,700. That's the purchasing power loss due to the inflation risk.
So those are the kind of things that have to be done when somebody comes in and sits down with a well-qualified wealth manager. Those are the kind of decisions that are walked through, and this whole risk piece we're talking about is a part of that discussion, is what you're saying. Now, I want you to comment on something else. I want to give an application here. When we talk about biblically responsible investing, we're talking about not investing in those kinds of stocks or investments like pornography, alcohol, abortion, and other culturally destructive activities.
Add human trafficking to that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the list really is long, Wim, it is. But I'm thinking one here as well. Is gambling? Gambling not a part of BRI investing either, is it? And a lot of people gamble, and that is a high-risk activity. Compare that kind of risk, as in going out on the gambling table, which many do and lose millions, as compared to this kind of risk we're talking about when you sit down and say, how am I going to enter into my investment strategy?
Well, there's a friendly, gentleman's bet. For example, I say to you, the Eagles are going to win a Super Bowl again next year. And you say, no way, Bill. And I say, well, if I'm wrong, I'll take you out for a piece of pizza. I mean,
right.
I think for me, that's not problematic.
But that's not what we're talking about.
No, people that are going out and spending money at the casino or even to some degree, if people are buying lottery tickets on a regular basis, you're gambling with your money. That money could be used for God's work throughout this world in a much better manner. And I can tell you, you can reap much more rewards than you're going to get out of a lottery ticket if you give that money back to Christ. So, gambling is an addiction. It is a problem. And guess what? They didn't build big casinos with their own money. They built big casinos with your money. Okay.
So that's a case where risk is never in favor of the person who sits down
never.
At the table.
Nope.
That risk is controlled by the guys that are setting those numbers at the top. And that's a loser for the great majority of people. The winner is going to be in that setting. But that's not the same kind of risk we're talking about here when you sit down and you take a risk-alized test with you or another Christian wealth manager. That is different.
Yes, no doubt about that. I mean, they're totally different. Christ doesn't want you to be at the casino and betting on things. I mean, I think the money could be used for something so much more better.
It is. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll spend more time in a future program, perhaps on certain pieces of this area, and maybe we'll go more into the whole gambling issue, because basically all the states are doing it, or most of them, and there's a lot involved. We'll touch on this in a deeper way on a future program. When we come back, I want to go a little bit more heavily into biblically responsible investing. We've talked about it. We're going to talk more in depth about it, what it is, and what you need to know about it.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials classes are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' Editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. Here's a thank you note from Tricia, who listens to Stand in the Gap on our anchor station, WFYL in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. She said, "I'm a repeat donor and a regular listener to Stand in the Gap from noon until 1 p.m. APN President Sam Rohr and his knowledgeable guests open my eyes every time I listen to them. I enjoy and am so blessed hearing about current life issues from their strong biblical and constitutional perspective." Well, Tricia, thanks for your kind words. Your comments speak for tens of thousands of others just like you all across the country. And we're so glad for the freedom to communicate the truth so people like you who want to know the truth can do so and be confident in recommending us to your friends. Thanks also for being a monthly partner and helping set a model for others. We depend on the gifts of God's people and the listeners to our radio and now our TV program to continue. May God bless you, Tricia. Now, if you've not written to us or partnered with us like Tricia, would you do so right now? Just go to standinthegapradio.com. Why do nations reject God and embrace evil? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr with the American Pastors Network and a sobering Stand in the Gap Minute. The Apostle Paul tells us in Romans 1 that once people know the truth of God and experience His blessings, then through science and technology discover the witness of God as Creator, but then reject the Creator and refuse to give God the glory, God says that He'll remove His mercy from these people and permit them to experience unlimited sin. From general sexual sin to deviant sexual attractions to unrestrained evil minds, those who reject God will not only be allowed to pursue all the sin they want, but to also experience the long list of consequences of their sin they don't want. Personally, I prefer to embrace the truth and pursue obedience to God. Now, how about you? Could I invite you to stand with us in prayer and help lead the way by turning back to God, not following the culture away from Him? Join with us and add your name to our email prayer list at standinthegapradio.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, whether you consider debt or spending or interest rates, mortgage rates, taxes, the price of oil or gas or investing or whatever it is, all the things we've talked about on this program today, great wisdom, God's wisdom, is really needed. And as we presented in earlier Money Mission Friday programs, all of our wealth, in fact, everything we have or we possess, belongs to God. We've talked about that. We've talked about how it came from God and that what we have is to be properly stewarded, not for our benefit only, but for the glory of God, to bring what brings attention to Him. Now, this view of finances and life and God, as we talk about this, is an extension of what we refer to on this program as a biblical worldview. But this biblical worldview and how that applies to our living, according to how this is laid out, it's essential, understanding this, for God's blessing in our own individual lives, our personal life, our family life, our community life, and our national life. Deuteronomy chapter 30, God told Israel that recognizing Him and living according to His commands, His principles, His statutes, and His guideline for living would lead to life, to security from the enemy, and physical prosperity, where the exact opposite would result if we ignored God's plan for living. So the whole concept of biblical worldview, what the Bible says, economics, possessions, assets, all of those things are very, very clearly laid out. And in many respects, when it comes to the matter of how we invest what we have, how we steward what we have, comes under the heading of what we term biblically responsible investing. You could say biblically responsible stewardship, but on this regard, it's focusing on what we do with that money, how we invest it. We bury it in the ground, or do we try to get some return for God's glory? Now, I want to go into that just a bit more. We've referred to it, and there's a website there now. It's available, called BRIinvesting.com. biblicalresponsibleinvesting.com. That stands for biblicalresponsibleinvesting.com. William, as we conclude this program and kind of wrap up some of these things, I want to bring it down home. So, all right, what's the practical aspect of this? We've talked about risk. We've talked about some of these other things. Let's bring that now into biblically responsible investing, which takes all of these principles, puts it together, and says, here is a way that you can take what you have, invest in things that are going to be honoring to God. So if you would define a little bit more about what BRI investing is and what a person would find if they go to that website.
Well, one of the things is you can get on our mailing list, and I think, Sam, you and I talked about even possibly doing a newsletter in the future around these topics because it's hard to cover it in 1 hour. That being said, you know, going to BRI Investing, it delves into a lot of, it's an act of worship, but there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just investing money in clean stocks in a portfolio that's going to allow you to sleep at night, because most people forced through their employers are invested in mutual funds that have sin stocks in pornography, abortion, LGBT, human trafficking, and they're invested in it and they're profiting from it. They don't realize it. And people are stuck a little bit with their 401k, unless they were to ask their employer to add BRI investments to their platform. But it goes into deeper detail when you're sitting down with an individual or a couple. It talks about debt reduction. It talks about passing your wisdom of how you manage your money onto your children, your grandchildren, and taking a certain amount of your money each and every week that you make and setting it aside for savings as well as tithing to your church. So it's just not about investing. BRI investing is about a way of life. How do I conduct myself? Am I investing in things that are going to allow me to sleep at night? And am I, you know, do I have too much credit card debt? Do I have the right estate plan? Am I teaching anything to my children by setting things up? And I want parents to get engaged with their children, regardless of their age. Here's what we're doing with our estate. Here's what we're doing with our tithing. Here's what we're doing to set aside for your college. These children today need to know the things and the steps in place in order to honor Christ. So it goes beyond just investing money. It's about taking the wisdom that Christ gives us and passing that on to the next generation and the generation after that. So it's really investing from A to Z. We talk about estate planning. We talk about debt reduction. We talk about a lot of things when we talk about BRI investing. It's not just investing in mutual funds or ETFs or stocks. It's about investing, taking the money that Christ has given you, it belongs to Him. He's blessed you with it, and then growing it so that you can give more, or buy support a missionary, whatever it is you want to do. It's important for us not to hide our talents and come back to Christ with one. If He gives you a lot, then He says He expects you to do a lot with it. So that's why BRI investing is important.
All right, and I think that's important, William, is that, ladies and gentlemen, when you hear that terminology, biblically responsible investing, it does speak to the whole aspect of recognizing that, as we've just said, all that we have has come from God. It's on loan to us. And in reality, our children are on loan from God. They are gifts of God. That's what that means, what Scripture says. They're gifts. They're loaned. We have a duty to train them up in the ways of God so they can go and then teach their children. Well, the financial principle part of what Scripture lays out, and the Scripture is full of references to economics and finances because God places a great deal of attention on that. A biblical worldview, as we're talking, understanding that God lays out a way of living and a way of viewing life, all of those things found in the Word of God, that when we pursue life and living from God's perspective, as I cited earlier, Deuteronomy 30 says that is choosing life. Well, the choosing of life is choosing God's blessing, and God's blessing results in a number of things, a security. It does result in prosperity and God giving us even more than we need. All these things kind of come together in that full capacity. So, William, as you're saying, BRIinvesting.com is a place to go now that will allow people to find out more about what investing is. It's talked about risk on there. We talk about levels of investment, but these are things that are clean. These are investments specifically there on that site that are not involved in what you call sin stocks or immoral or anti-God activities. So just build that out just a little bit more as we come close to the end of the program.
Well, look, here's what I say to people that call and ask for advice about investing, and I get phone calls every week, and I meet with people. I ask them this simple question in the beginning of our interview. Do you want your religious or your moral convictions to match your portfolio? 99.9% of the time, people say yes. And when I have to show them what's in their portfolio, because we use software that basically shows what they're invested in, they're shocked that they're invested in abortion. They're shocked they're invested in LGBT rights, anti-family. There's so many things that they're invested in, and they don't realize it. So I think people listening have to think to themselves, how am I worshiping Christ by being invested in things that don't uphold our Christian values and our morals and our beliefs? Why am I profiting from something I would never, ever support? And yet you are. If you're invested in certain mutual funds, you are invested in abortion. You are invested in pornography. You are invested in human trafficking. You are invested in LGBT, anti-family stuff. These are things that people need to wake up, and you don't have to give up return by being in a BRI portfolio. That's a great thing about it.
And that's a great thing as well. And when we've run out of time, but ladies and gentlemen, you have heard it. We've described really what it is, but you don't have to sacrifice return, nor do you have to engage in high risk investments. Not at all. Matter of fact, it's really kind of just more of just the opposite. So anyways, we want to thank you for being with us today here as we're going to close out this another week as we move now into Memorial Day weekend. We ask that all of you, wherever you go with your family, enjoy them. But give glory to God. Thank Him for living in a country where we have freedom and there are others that were willing to have died and laid down their life so that we can have the freedom that we have. Amen. Until Tuesday, have a great weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit standinthegapradio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.